Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
This episode is brought to you by you. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate to become a member today.
You're listening to Feast Meets West, the show tracing the stories behind your favorite Asian foods. I'm your host, Linda Liu. We are broadcasting from Heritage Radio Network at Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Every episode, we dig deep on an aspect of Asian cuisine or culture by having a conversation with the passionate people from the world of Asian food. Today, we're talking to restaurateur Rani Mazumdar and chef Chintan Pandya, the dynamic duo behind Adda, Indian canteen in Long Island City, Rahi in Greenwich Village, and the soon-to-be-opened Damaka in Essex Street Market. Their restaurants, each with a distinct character of their own, are opening the eyes and palates of New Yorkers to what authentic Indian food looks and tastes like. The menus composed by Chef Chintan are inspired by recipes found across the Indian subcontinent, nostalgic dishes that he and Rani grew up with, and innovations with Indian flavors and cooking techniques. Welcome to the show, you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Also, this is our 80th episode of Feast Meets West with Heritage Radio Network. Yay. So I feel really special to have you guys here with me.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Should we feel old? It's 80?
No, 80 is a very lucky number in Chinese culture.
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah, number the eight. Yeah, number the eight. So, you know, this is all auspicious, us celebrating together.
I love it.
And your guys' success.
Look at that. Thank you. Thank you for inviting us.
Okay, let's maybe start from the beginning for those that don't know about you guys. You know, maybe let's start with your personal journey in food. What inspired you to go down this path? And what led you to your current position?
Sure. Well, I'm a first-generation immigrant. Moved here in 96. And I remember a time when, you know, even going out to a restaurant felt like a big deal. So honestly, opening up a restaurant was never really part of the plan. It was just something that other people do, not people within my circle or my family.
And where did you guys live?
I was living in the Bronx
okay.
at the time.
New Yorker.
Parkchester. That's right. So that's where we moved. So growing up, it was a lot of fun in many ways, but because food played a central role. And I took that for granted, meaning I didn't know that in birthdays, people don't all have like a good 9 or 10 course meal. I thought that's just the way every family operates. As I grew older, I started to recognize that my father had a humongous affinity, sort of what he considered food to be, how our family looked at food was where it was a protagonist of the family in many ways. Fast forward to a point where my dad's retiring. He was with NYPD traffic at this time. And I started to ask myself, well, where do we go from here? He uprooted himself, took such a huge leap. And when you do that, you don't end up making a lot of new friends in this country because you moved at a later stage. So what's his livelihood going to be like? Mm-hmm. And, you know, if he had that opportunity, what would he have done?
Yeah. That's a very thoughtful thing to think as a child.
Yeah, I think it's quite natural. I don't think I've done anything special. I think we all should think that way. Mm-hmm. None of us, you know, got here in a vacuum. So someone and some people supported us. And I think it's critical that we look back and know where we come from. So looking at my father, I said, you know, I think it would be fun if we had a restaurant. Never run a restaurant. I never have. He just cooks at home for fun. just like my mom. So I grew up in a family where both mom and dad cooked, and it was a really mm-hmm. interesting dynamic.
Was there a specific regional cuisine that they cooked?
Yeah, Bengali, so Eastern India. So most of what they know is really from that part of the country, where there's almost zero representation of that in America right now. Chintan and I talk all the time about this. They're like, man, there's like, in India, there's so many different regions, and yet all of it is unexplored right mm-hmm. now, except for just a few dishes yeah. that people keep thinking yeah. that's what the cuisine's about. So ultimately ended up opening a small restaurant 8.5 years ago named the Masala Wala. Really, to the credit to my father, it took off, it worked wonders. And from there, I started to realize how much of a gap there is in the industry and why, and on the totem pole where Indian food really resides or doesn't even exist.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wait a minute, this is one of the most complex cuisines in the world. In the greatest city, the food city of the planet, there's almost no real representation. So I said, maybe there's something I can do about it and at least try.
Yeah.
And that's where the idea started to evolve. Eventually, again, fast forward, there's Chintan and I, and we ended up creating Rahi, that's in the West Village, which is a modern take on Indian food. Then we ended up creating Adda, which is home style, and now creating Damaga, which is going to focus on grills. And the whole idea there is that we started to look at the whole picture of Indian food and started to say, which angles do we start presenting to New Yorkers, as opposed to just saying, here's a one-dimensional approach to what our food has been for the last almost 40 years. And don't get me wrong, there has been wonderful restaurants in the last 40 years, but not enough.
Mm-hmm.
Having one or two really exciting Indian restaurants just doesn't move the needle.
Oh, 100%.
And I think as a group, that's the vision, and that's what brings us here. So that's what I do.
That's great. What about you, Chintan?
So before I start, his dad is an awesome cook. Trust me. Phenomenal. Like
this, I trust you.
No. The seafood that he makes is insane, like insanely like tasty and delicious. And I just had a fight with him today morning. His dad, because he didn't give anything to me on Thanksgiving. He normally gives. That's right. Yeah. So,
nice preface there. Okay.
No. So for me, I've been cooking for nearly 20 years now. Mm-hmm. So I was in India for 10 years. Then moved on to Singapore, was there for, I think, close to 4.5 years. Then I moved to Cleveland, then to Atlanta, and this is the third city in America I'm cooking. And I think I'd been very disappointed and frustrated with the kind of Indian food which was served in America.
Mm-hmm.
Because you come with a humongous expectation as this is the country where the food has, like, you know, the food is the main thing.
Yeah, there's so much supply.
The best ingredients you get, the best products you get. And it's sort of a very disappointing, feeling about it. And it took me a lot of time to understand why the food was so bad. Why Indian food was like this. And that's how, and I think what clicked with me and Ronnie was that our vision for Indian food was similar as to what we wanted to achieve. Our working style is two different paradigms,
mm-hmm.
Like literally two different sides of the coin.
Yeah, could you describe that? Like, what do you mean by two different sides?
Like I can keep on praising about myself and speaking back. No, it's just a different working style. I'm mm-hmm. like he's a very thoughtful person. He'll think through this. I'm a very rational person.
Mm.
He takes decisions from his heart. I take it from my brain. So
love
it's
it.
Different things altogether.
And then you have a shared stomach, so.
No. So balanced partnership, I would say.
That's cool.
And what he has, I don't have it, and what I have, he doesn't have it.
Yeah.
So it just balances it out.
And what made you decide to go into food while you were in India?
Now, people think I lie about it, but mm-hmm. the main motivation was that I'll be paid and I'll get free food.
Yeah. So logical. There you go. I see that side of you.
Yeah, he doesn't eat much at the restaurants.
Nowadays. No, I have to go on a diet. Like, my wife has told me strictly to be on diet.
So funny.
Yeah.
And then how did you guys meet?
Through a common friend. I was on the verge of opening this place and...
Rahi. Yeah,
and then it was right around that time I was looking to see who's the right individual. And
yeah.
good Lord, you know, part of the reason I think Indian food hasn't been very exciting in America is not because people chose to do so, but because there simply hasn't been enough of real talents.
Yeah, the talent. Okay.
To execute food on that level, there's literally, except for four or five people, I don't think there's a real stuff that's happening in the country who understands the true integrity of Indian food. So we meet him for the first time, and I'll never forget. It was, you know, before any other conversation, he says, let me cook this meal and then we can kind of discuss. I was like, okay, cool. That's great. And he spent 3 days cooking almost a 14-course meal all by himself. I repeatedly said, would you like me to, you know, provide you with a couple of, you know, helpers, anyone? He's like, I got this. Yeah. He will come in like 2 hours before or the day before, stay in the kitchen, understand. And by day three and bite number three, I'm like, what the heck am I thinking? Like, really, there's something so special about this guy. It's not just his talent, because the dishes were to die for.
Yeah.
But the kind of commitment, I think this is really what we need to make a group successful. And we were really at our infancy at the time. It was all there was really like a small restaurant named Masala Wala, and that's it. But so you're trying to break ground in a city like New York with a cuisine that might not be anywhere close to mainstream. It starts to, it's a daunting task, and it's somewhat of an uphill battle, and you need to make sure the team is right. And mm-hmm. I felt that there was no one better. And there were a few of us in the room. We all sort of looked at each other literally on the third bite.
Yeah, sold. Like, it's like, I don't like, even need to get through really the 14 dishes. Yeah. We'll eat them anyways, though, because right. They're so
we
good.
Did. We actually ate through all of it.
That's awesome. So tell us about your first concept, Rahi. So what does that name mean? And how did you guys decide to start there versus Adda?
Sure. The word Rahi means a traveler. Mm. So it's a term for a traveler, a person who travels a lot. That's the name Rahi. So when we were deciding on the menu, there were obviously many names we discussed. And we were looking for a name which excited all of us. And one thing we were very clear that we are going to do normally you go to a restaurant, they say, oh, this is a North Indian restaurant, this is a South Indian restaurant. And we said, we don't need to be playing in that boundaries. We need to cook what we love, what we want to show it to the people. And that's why the word Rahi, because it's all about the travels. You know, like how we travel in India, like we go to multiple places, all our recipes across India, you know, picked up from different regions, a lot of small regional recipes. And the theme behind Rahi was that we'll take a recipe, we'll take an authentic recipe, break it down, and see how we can replace the flavors with the New York state, like New York ingredients, all the local ingredients, and make it look in a way totally different. But the taste, when you close your eyes and eat it, it's still the same. So that was the entire motivation behind Rahi, to create every dish.
And I mean, think about it, how much, there are so much produce. And see, I'm looking at India from the 80s and 90s, and the economy wasn't as open. So it was a time when literally all you had were just ingredients that grew very locally. Versus you're here in New York, my God, like it's a whole world of... I learned about edamame once I came to this country. I didn't know about it. And that's what I mean, that when we talk about exposure, it's not just that only the Western or the French. I mean, just from a global perspective, there's so much out there that's right there at your fingertips. And I feel that with the evolution of Indian food, it's a necessary step, as opposed to just saying this is what it is, which is what happens at Adda. And that's I think the approach is to try to justify something as what's right and what's wrong. I don't know if that's really possible. I think it's food with integrity. It's really looking at those dishes, understanding, are you staying true to the flavors? And at times, every chef, you have to play to your own tune and actually make those decisions. And that's what happens at Rahi. And then comes Adda.
Yeah, and then came Adda. And there's been so much recognition around the restaurant, so kudos on that. Why do you have a sense of why you think everyone's gravitating towards this restaurant concept now?
I think, look, if anyone has that answer figured out,
it'll be like, lottery ticket every time.
The magic is, I think somewhere and then Chintan, share what you think here as well. It's that I think the energy needs to be right. A concept needs to be simple enough that people can respond to. And of course, every concept, I think it works in a certain era. And I think Adda ended up becoming that restaurant that opened up that whole new era of where Indian food gets accepted in its own true form, where it's okay to eat goat brains. And there's multitude of reasons for that. You have millennials who are traveling far more. You have social media that's exposing people to cultures that they have never had the exposure for before. Therefore, creating a mindset of far more openness than we might have had 20 years ago. Therefore, today, we didn't put goat brains to make a statement. We did it because that's true to our cuisine. It's what people eat. If there's, you know, in a French restaurant, someone's serving a cow brain, and there's nothing right or wrong. They're not trying to make a statement. So to us, I think as a concept, the simplicity of it and the energy, we don't really sell food. I don't think anyone really sells food. We're sitting here at Roberta's. Look around you. It's how do you define what's absolutely right? What's absolutely, should that light bulb be 2 inches to the left and then it's right? It's not like that at all. I think what it is in the end, the food, the people, your mindset and what you wish to create needs to sing in unison. And when it does, that's how you get Adda. Trust me, I would have never expected for Adda to turn out the way it did, but here we are.
Yeah, James Beard nod and everything.
No, and you know, as you put it, there's no set formula for it. If you asked, we opened on September 12, 2018. Yeah. If you would have asked us on September 11, that do you think this is going to work? We would have told we don't know. I mean, genuinely, and it is. But we are very clear as to whenever we do something, we are very clear as to what is the gist behind doing this. So when we were doing Adda, the gist was home style, quality and affordable Indian food. Now, one thing we strongly work on are the ingredients. People think because it's Indian food and the way it was perceived in the market that it has to be cheap, but it's actually not. Most of the ingredients that we use are actually very expensive. And on top of that, we source out ingredients which we feel are of the right quality. So I think Adda is all about that. It's all about the energy. It's a very small place. It is not your fine dine restaurant where you'll get the proper service or anything. It's a very friendly, like the brief to the team is only one thing, that just remember that the person who's walking in is your friend and he's dining at your house.
Yeah.
So there are no service standards. People ask us, like, what is service standards at Adda? And I say, there are none. It's just a place where you are coming here, you are our friend, and we are serving you. It's something.
I love that. When I was dining there, I also felt that warmth. There was definitely like...
So the heat was working.
Yes. The heat was working this winter. Everyone was like buzzing and like having a great time and just ordering like a ton of different things to share on the table. I saw like basically it was just a great time that everyone was having. And then in terms of the service, it was really fun with the biryani rice when the waiter came and like opened it up. And then like scooped it, and you see like the lamb and the rice being all like mixed together. And that was just definitely like a festive experience in itself.
I feel like we don't get much of that. And I don't mean that from just a food perspective. You know, he has spent longer time in India, and we always talk about what a canteen really feels like. And it's called Adda Indian Canteen. And now imagine if all of a sudden you feel like you're walking into a canteen, but it feels like this five-star restaurant, then the vision is not really there. So to us, we simply stayed true to what, even the cutlery, the plates, the simplicity of it, it's just that simple. And we honestly, it's in an obscure location. It's not like the hottest spot in town. There's none of that. I think we genuinely felt maybe, to look back and say, maybe we all wanted to feel a little bit unshackled. When we look at this business,
I like that.
Everyone feels a lot of pressure.
Right.
Like, oh, we have to do this. This is the revenue model. This is the way it has to be. We have to push harder this month. For once, we felt, you know what? Let's take a place where it just doesn't matter. We have that confidence to say, we'll be fine. what's the worst that's going to happen? And I think right there opened up the opportunity for him to be himself, for me to be myself. And we call this food Unapologetic Indian, by all means. For the first time, we felt maybe liberated to say, it's all right. Maybe 5 people will show up. But if they do, they're going to get the real experience. Instead, 500 showed up. Part we didn't predict.
When I was leaving, there was like a wait for tables. And to be honest, like my favorite dish that we ordered were the prawns. I started just like eating it by my hand, using my hands.
Yes, that's how it should be.
Just like pulling off the head and sucking on it. No shame. Can you describe some of your favorite dishes that you've been making?
Actually, the funny thing about Adda menu is it is what I like to eat. I'm not exaggerating. He actually didn't even see the menu 2-3 days before the opening of the restaurant.
Such and
he
just, trust. I love that. Yeah.
No, but he was disappointed 2 days before the opening.
I was.
He actually told me, are you sure you want to do this menu? And I said, yeah, it's okay. There's nothing wrong in it. And he's like, dude, this is like very weird. And I said, no, it's not. It's mm-hmm. The entire menu is like what I like to eat. Like if I go somewhere, this is what I want to eat.
Yeah. Like if you were home in India and going out with your friends.
Yeah. Like if I'm hanging out with my friends, I want to eat this. I want to eat that. And these are these things what I want to eat. And I said, like, let's do it. And as he said that we actually had a lot of, I would say, a buffer where we were not stressed out saying that, okay, we are in this spot, which is the prime location. It's just that it was a game where we played freely. Let's put it that way. And, you know, we actually closed the restaurant at 9 p.m. I don't know if you know about it. But the last guest that we taken is like 8:45.
Mm.
Sunday, we are closed.
Mm. Tell me how many places in Manhattan paying that rent.
Yeah, that you can afford that.
You're counting rent, right? And all of a sudden the livelihood of the staff is no longer in conversation.
Mm.
And that's what I mean. I think the way the business has really grown, and I don't mean just Indian restaurants, I mean restaurants in general,
mm-hmm.
it's become so much about the margins that we have somewhere diluted the idea of food, and only with really high margins and a certain cuisine that you can survive in a certain location.
Mm-hmm.
And I think all of that gets shattered by an example like Adda that, you know, I think it was 2 days before opening. And I remember that whole fear. There's the menu he created, I looked at it. And we share, one of the foundations of how we work is that trust factor. I know he cooks what he believes in. Yet there was a part of me that was so fearful. And I said, how will we convince people that I know your dishes will be better? But if the menu reads exactly the same way, how maybe 20% of restaurants do, how is that one other person going to read it and say, I think this dish is better, therefore I'll go in, even though it reads and seems like the exact same dish? And we didn't really have an answer for that. And that was my fear, is I have no idea, because I never thought any press, any media, anybody was ever going to show up. Honestly speaking, I thought it would just be a place where just down the block, it's a 10-block radius. I used to go around, give out, you know, flyers and menus and all of that before opening, meeting the people, hoping that maybe they would actually...
A local neighborhood restaurant.
That's it. Yeah. It's a small place. It's okay. We're going to get it done. Never imagined the kind of national attention, all of that. But looking back, yeah, I think it was fear, insecurity, all of these. And I remember talking to him, and I'm like, do you think this is going to work? And he's like, well, let's give it 3 months. If it doesn't, I'll change it.
No, I told him. I said, see, I don't know. But I said, my gut says it might work, but not at the level at which we are working right now.
Right.
I'll be honest. If I told you, oh, I knew always that it's going to fly. No, it's not true. I knew that we would be, you know, just sailing. I knew that with this thing, I would have sailed easily. I wasn't sure if we are going to like fly like a supersonic jet. That's what's happening. And he told me, do you think it works? I said, see, and I told him that time, I said, you know what? I feel that everybody's doing it, but nobody's doing it right.
Yeah.
You understand? So there's two ways of doing things. One is you just do it. One is you do it right. And I said, if we do it right, and if we get lucky, something will work over here. And I said, if it doesn't work, 3 months down the line, we'll change the entire thing. I said, we don't have any identity. Maybe 3 months down the line also we might not have any identity. We'll change everything then and let's see what happens. And yeah, that's how we opened up.
This is so cool.
It's I was so concerned. I didn't know if this project even would be right for him. He's always cooked at like really grand, high-end kitchens and all of that. And here's this tiny little location. I'm like, dude, are you sure you want to do this? He's like, I would love to do this. I go back 2 days later. I'm like, I think I've thought this through. I don't think this is the right project. He's like, Ronnie, if it wasn't, I would tell you. I'm like, all right, I guess you're sure about it.
Yeah, well, this is the reward that you guys have from, you know, being very true to yourself and then also breaking the mold and, you know, trying something new in terms of the restaurant formula. So that's really cool to hear. I love this
story.
There
is no formula. So yeah. what do you really follow? And
yeah, it's like, it's, you know, just by opening in Manhattan in a busy area, that does not guarantee success by any means. So this is really great. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back with more Feast Meets West.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Roberta's was founded in Bushwick in 2008 and has become one of the most iconic restaurants in the country. HRN made its home inside of Roberta's in 2009, and together they have become part of the DIY fabric of the neighborhood. Roberta's, the pizza restaurant, is open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week and serves much more than just the famous wood-fired pizzas. Their team dreams up new salads, pastas, and sandwiches on the regular. Roberta's Tiki Bar is alive and well in the back garden, serving up frozen drinks in the summer and hot toddies in the winter. Stop by the bakery and takeout spot next door for fresh breads, sticky buns, and pizzas to go. And of course, there's the 2 Michelin-starred Blanca tucked away in the garden for truly daring diners. But Roberta's also extends beyond Bushwick, with multiple locations in New York City and now in Los Angeles. You can also find their frozen pies in grocery stores around the country. The spirit of Roberta's, like Heritage Radio Network, is everywhere. Here's to many more years of pizza-powered radio. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
You listen to Heritage Radio Network because, let's face it, you have really good taste. You care about where your food comes from, who made it, and its impact on the planet. Whether you're looking for an inspiring interview with your favorite celebrity chef, the latest on Dave Arnold's Spins All, or if you want to get down and dirty with some agricultural policy, we've got you covered. 10 years in and 13,000 episodes later, HRN continues to be the go-to media outlet for thoughtful eaters like you. And we never could have done it without the support of our listeners. Help Food Radio continue in the future and help us raise enough funds for the year to come. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate today. And since you've got such good taste, we have some very cool member gifts for you to choose from. Thanks for listening and for being a part of the HRN community.
Welcome back, you guys. You're listening to Feast Meets West. So the next project that's opening up is Domica. What can we expect with that project and what's something maybe New Yorkers won't have seen before?
So I can assure you one thing, what you won't get is you won't get something out of Rahi and Adda. It has to be a totally different thing. So we're working on it. I don't have a definite answer as to what it's going to be or anything.
When is it slated to open?
I think somewhere around. We had some construction issues, et cetera, just from a building side. So yeah, it's taking us a few extra months than what we predicted. Sometime, I would say February to March.
Okay.
That's the right time.
Soon.
Yeah, and so it's very clear as to it will be something new as a product, and I'm working on it as, something like the first thing on the chalkboard is it cannot have anything resembling or very close to what Rahi and Adda is.
Nice.
So, and what we want to do is, as a group, we want to show different spectrums of Indian food.
Right.
You know, we just don't want to, we don't want to cut copy every model that we do. Everything new, you know, something that gives a more unique experience about Indian food.
A more colorful understanding.
Yeah.
And how do you decide on those concepts? Like which aspect of Indian cuisine to showcase next?
There is no scientific formula that we have for it.
Oh, well, I should really share the algorithm by
now. No, it's a lot of like, it goes up and down a lot. Like we have been discussing about Dhamaka for now next last 3-4 months.
I see.
We do some things here and there. We do samplings. Like once we have the vision right, then we know how to like, you know, right now we are also deciding as to how it will work out. What are the things we want? What is the feel we want? You know, the entire experience of it.
Yeah. And where do you look to for inspiration? Do you travel around? Do you go visit other restaurants?
We obviously go to lots and lots and lots of restaurants. Yeah. And that's one of the reasons I can't lose weight.
Sure. Part of the job.
Sure, yeah. Man. That's the reason, I'm sure.
Yeah. So, yeah. No, honestly, like, and he loves to eat. Ronnie loves to eat. He goes to all the places.
Not Ronnie alone, but anyhow, we're going to.
The team.
Yeah, the team loves to eat collectively.
And yeah, so we go to a lot of places, try to understand, try to understand the feel as to, you know, like, what makes this place click or what is good about this place. We try to pick up the positive out of all the small, and it's not only Indian restaurants I'm talking about. It could be any kind of a food. But something is a thing that will, you know, we'll enjoy. Like, we'll understand that, wow, this clicks over here. Why does it work over there? What is the reason? Then
I think one of the other big things we look at is also memories.
Yeah.
So we end up having a lot of conversation. So it's not what already exists, but it's what could be created. And each of us, it's kind of like writing a song, right? That's what a restaurant is. A song that goes on for 10 years. We're giving you a lease term.
In New York.
But really, it's each of us have a very distinctly different childhood.
Sure.
We both come from a middle-class background, but from different regions. I moved here at a very different age.
Right.
And so my perception towards the cuisine is very different from his. And I think what makes our group tick is how different we are. And we celebrate that difference. Sometimes fight about it, but that's a separate topic. But it's necessary, I think, to not all agree on everything. This is what we're doing. Oh, everybody agrees. Right. No, I think it's important to have a difference in opinion. And somewhere you find that common ground. And I always ask, why do we have a difference in opinion? Because each of us care enough to have a difference in opinion. If the other one didn't, they're like, all right, whatever you say, I'll do it. Same thing. We don't operate that way. But I think our memories, how we grew up, our families, Adda, he drew incredible inspiration from all the locals that he visited throughout the country. And the more we see New York, the more we realize that a lot of our quote-unquote grand kitchens have been tried to be replicated in the past, but not many people have been talking about what the everyday population, what we actually ate.
Right.
And what that real experience was like, even if it's as simple as serving a goat on the bone, it sounds so simple and obvious, doesn't it? Ask yourself why no other restaurant does it from an Indian, you know, cuisine perspective. Go out to, there's 400 plus Indian restaurants in this town. You're lucky if you find 10 of them in the last 40 years, actually serving even goat. Why? Because we're, again, that memory is what we really have. No, do you understand lamb is actually not a dominant meat in India? I never knew what lamb was a delicacy. It was all about goat, and it was always on the bone. Like, how do you eat otherwise? Such simple memories to really being honest and authentic about it, I think is part of the goal. And here we're looking at, you know, techniques of grilling.
Yeah.
Whenever we think of India, we talk about curries. Nothing wrong with it. It's a phenomenal part of the culture. But there's more to it, to that story. And that's what it is. Everyone's been focusing on one aspect of the story and keeps on harping on it. Our goal is to say, wait a minute, the story has so many different components. Let us show you a different one.
Grills,
kebabs, different ways of you know, cooking the meats or vegetables. That's what it's going to be about.
Yeah. And then one of the things that we talked about in a previous conversation is how, you know, with kind of the one-dimensional representation we're currently seeing of Indian cuisine, there's some, you know, butter and cream that's added to make the spices more mild. But really, Indian food is about the big highs and lows with the spices, right?
Sure. It's Washington Post did a piece on this not that long ago, I think maybe 2 years ago, how it talks about the fundamental difference between Western and Eastern food. Mm. How Eastern food is really about conflicting flavor profiles as opposed to, you know, Western food, which is you have a beautiful fish and you have a nice cream sauce.
A very safe path.
Yeah, like, it's not right. Again, no right, right or wrong. Different. It's just a cultural difference.
Mm.
And I think we somewhere have been desperately trying to fit in with our cultures from an Asian perspective and trying to hope that let's appeal to the palate that already kind of exists. So let's add some butter or cream. Using butter is not a crime, but things like heavy cream, and he was so against it. He does not use heavy cream in the saag paneer that is there in Adda.
Mm-hmm.
And funny part, there are Indians who have shown up and says, this saag paneer doesn't taste right.
Oh my gosh.
I'm like, you're right, because you've never tasted
right.
What's
and they grew up here just eating whatever.
Yes, yes, and that's what it is. That's your perception of what real, authentic version of a saag paneer is.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think we knew? I didn't know what heavy cream was in India. No one knew. And also, there was that whole manufactured process. If we needed cream, my mom would take the milk and actually simmer it.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have access to that. Mm-hmm. It's just no one used heavy cream. So for him, these are little steps, but I think that goes a long way. Maybe you can share.
And I think what also happens with the saag paneer is that...
So you're making it from scratch in the kitchen.
Yeah. And we actually don't... Like, what happens is a lot of people over here, what they do is they take the... When they say use the word saag and paneer, they take spinach, which they boil it, or they have frozen spinach, they puree it, they cook it. But actually, my mother at home would never cook it. In the sense, puree it, boil it and puree it.
Okay.
So the word saag is a generic term for greens. It is not a term for spinach.
Mm-hmm.
Spinach is palak. So... And when you call a saag, it has to have multiple greens. So that's what we do. And we don't even... So we just take the whole baby greens and just saute it in its own... You know, just heat it up and just let it wilt. And then add in the cottage cheese to it. So it's a very simplistic, it's a home-style recipe.
Yeah. And something so simple like that, it's changing and adding to people's perceptions of Indian food. That's great.
Now imagine my fear when the guy wants to put saag paneer on the menu. I'm like, dude, everyone has saag paneer.
It's it's...
And he's like, but you haven't tried this. Let me make this. I'm like, okay, let's do this.
And then what is this VR project you're working on? And how did you get involved with that? You're juggling so many different things. I'm like trying to keep up.
I don't know if it's necessarily different. It's still food focused. I think our vision is really in a very specific direction. I think the big question we were asking as we have been running restaurants is what's next? How do you question the notion of how we've been dining for so long?
Mm-hmm.
And these are broad questions. And I think in our little extra time here and there, we'd like to ask these things of ourselves and things that I still don't have an answer for. So VR is a concept called Aero Banquet's RMX Remix. We teamed up with a fantastic artist named Mattia Casaleño. He is a fellow at the New Museum. So I met him through a common friend.
Mm-hmm.
And because there was a food component to his project, my friend is like, you should meet Ronnie. He says yes. And we actually go to his lab and I try this idea and it blew my mind. It's essentially... You are transported to a whole new world, and among them, you could see objects that are floating around,
mm-hmm.
except what if you could pick out one of those and eat it
Ooh,
in real life?
That's like a dream come true.
Right. It is kind of, or you know how that moment we get when we're sitting in New York and it's a gloomy, crazy, like, oh, I wish I was on a beach somewhere.
Uh-huh.
Where, what if you could be? And these are little moments from experiences that I think are transformative. So we've been really fortunate that Mitchell Davis has been so instrumental in bringing us to the James Beard House. And they've given us a home to actually start this as of November 13th. That's when it started. It's going to go on till the end of December. But the idea is we're getting so much excitement of the next version of how a chef and an artist can collaborate. The next big way of maybe how one day we can dine. And I don't know, like I said, our goal is not to say we have the answer and this is the holy grail.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're just doing this to ask the questions of ourselves.
Yeah, just exploring the beginnings of that.
And he had to rewire himself to almost think of how he's going to deliver this food in one bite. Because everything you have within virtual reality is literally a single bite.
Mm.
So how and...
It's very funny. Like,
it's a fun project.
Yeah, it's a fun project. And it's very challenging because, again, it is one bite. You cannot touch your food. There's a thing called as a vessel on which the food goes.
Mm-hmm.
It's supposed to hold the vessel and eat it as if you're drinking something.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are a lot of, there were a lot of restrictions to it. And that was the fun of it. Because, and again, the entire, so it can't be a very simplified dish. It has to be multiple layered, multiple flavors, multiple textures in one bite. And I think that's where the fun was, actually. So when he came after seeing the installation first time, I he spoke with me for like, I remember, like 25, 30 minutes. And I swear, I didn't understand anything.
telling me to do what now?
No, I told him like, I genuinely am not understanding what you're saying. Yeah. So I said, I need to see this to understand. So then we went actually. So Mattia had a small studio somewhere in Midtown, like in one weird building. It's like some top floor.
Yeah.
Like,
very
I'm not
cyberpunk.
Yeah, it's like a different kind of, like the building was like very strange. No, you don't see any humans in that building. Literally, there was no one. And
you stepped into the future.
Yeah. And then I see this and I like, that time obviously we didn't have the food, but I saw the entire thing. I understood what he wanted. And it sounds very exciting. Yeah. And the fun part is nobody has done it till now. We are the first, actually.
Yeah, in terms of an immersive VR dining experience.
Mm-hmm.
And look, I think the offset, it might sound like a little hokey idea. Like, well, what is this VR business? Why do I need to put on these goggles? But what if those goggles look like those simple eyeglasses that we put on now? What we're maybe focusing on is not where the technology is right at this moment, but our goal is to influence this. Mm-hmm. So that in the very near future, we can have a totally different experience that we can create. I call this the rotary phone of VR, like really early at its infancy. But it's what excites me personally is the potential of where it can go. Is ask yourself, why do we design a restaurant? Why do we put those lights? Why do we buy those tables? Because somewhere I'm hoping that your senses, your emotions will essentially make you love the food a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, everybody will look like a dungeon and just, here you go, man, eat up. It's not that. So what we need to recognize is how do you maybe rewire, stimulate each of those senses in order to create that heightened experience of what food can be.
Wow. I love all this. I can't wait to see what other projects you guys have lined up, especially understanding how your minds think and what you're chasing after. This is all really exciting.
You know, I don't know if our goal is to only do stuff that's avant-garde. I think the timing was right.
Mm-hmm.
And we do things that we genuinely feel some sense of emotion for. And that's what brought us here. And I think we'll just keep on following that.
All right. Before we wrap up the show, I just have a couple quick-fire questions for you. So it's meant to be fun and fast. Just share what comes to mind first. So what's the best thing you ate recently?
Me? Why would you answer?
Is this Roberta's pizza?
She said quick fire.
Yeah.
What is the best thing I ate? My wife made a home style porridge. I love
it. Yum.
Oh, he's getting
perfect
brownie
weather.
Points. That's what he's going to do.
What about you, Ronnie?
I think, you know, my best experience was at Razza, this pizzeria.
Where is that?
It's in Jersey City.
Grove Street.
And there's been so many different pizzerias I've been to. For some reason, it just hit home. And they have a creme brulee, I believe. It was just mind-boggling.
Awesome. All right, last question. What's something on your wish list for this holiday season?
The obvious. Spend a few more minutes with my son. and then create an amazing plan for the next year.
Best of both worlds.
All right, the wish list, obviously, is to lose weight.
He's been saying this for years.
Yeah,
years I've been here
a few times. All right, Well, that wraps up our show. Thank you for all the answers and for sharing your stories with us.
Thank you.
Thank
you. A pleasure. Thank you for inviting us.
All right. And thank you, dear listeners, for tuning in. This was our last episode of the year. We wish you and your loved ones a happy and delicious holiday season. And for my holiday wish list, it would mean so much if you could leave Feast Meets West a rating or review wherever you get your podcasts. And we'll see you all next year. Feast Meets West is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to find out more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Francis Lam, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.